It's 9 after 7. Good morning. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. This is the State Capitol Report. Last week, Governor Doyle hinted that the state's moratorium on building nuclear power plants might be lifted. On this edition of the State Capitol Report, we're going to look at both sides of the nuclear power issue. My first guest is Michael Corradini, Chair of Engineering Physics and Wisconsin Distinguished Professor of Nuclear Engineering and Engineering Physics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is in favor of lifting the moratorium. Good morning, Professor, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
In 2006, you were part of a special legislative committee that looked at the moratorium issue and recommended that it be lifted. What was the basis of that recommendation?
Well, I think the basis was twofold. One, that there were two provisos in the original legislation. One, that the economics of nuclear power be continued to look at, and that's already being done as part of the charge of the Public Service Commission, so that was felt that was redundant. And the second was relative to disposition of spent fuel. At this time, the Department of Energy has submitted its license for Yucca Mountain to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and my understanding is that will likely be docketed, which means be put up for the regulatory process over the next few months, and therefore we're on a path to license the facility at Yucca Mountain. That will take time, but that means we're on the expected path by the Waste Policy Act. So those two provisos in the law, at least for some people's view, were satisfied, and there was really no need for the law at this point.
Well, let's talk about spent fuel, because that certainly has been one of the big issues surrounding nuclear power, and that is, what do you do with the fuel rods when their useful life has passed and they need to go somewhere? And so far, we haven't found any place to put them. How soon will Yucca Mountain be online as a storage facility?
I wouldn't even hazard a guess. Originally, it was supposed to be accepting spent fuel in 1998 based on the High Level Waste Act. The Clinton administration chose to delay progress on Yucca Mountain for about 8 years. That put us behind, and we're now about at least 10 years behind, so I'd say no earlier than 2018, probably a bit later.
So in the meantime, what happens what are we doing with the spent fuel now?
It's being stored pretty reliably and safely at all the dry cast storage facilities around the nuclear power plants. One example might be, I think, Prairie Island is the one that comes to mind. After the spent fuel is removed from the reactor and is cooled down, it's put in concrete containers, almost like little silos, and just cooled by air on a pad, on a concrete pad near the plant. And that's done safely and reliably at most nuclear power plants today.
Now, Wisconsin has two nuclear power plants. Let's see, one is Point Beach, and I'm trying to remember the other one. I think
Kewaunee.
Kewaunee. I knew it started with a K. I wanted to say Kenosha for some reason. Must be Monday morning. These plants, how long have these plants been in operation?
Approximately 25, 30 years, over 30 years. I'm trying to think now. Kewaunee, I think, started in 1972, and I think Point Beach in either 71 or 73, so about 35 years. One has gone through and has been approved for plant life extension for 20 years. I think Kewaunee's in the process of requesting that.
There haven't been, I'm trying to remember, when the last nuclear power plant in the United States was built. I mean, it's been a long time since a new nuclear power plant went online in the U.S. What are some changes in technology that would make us perhaps feel more comfortable about nuclear energy?
Well, first, I wasn't uncomfortable to begin with, so I'm the silent majority on that, but nuclear power is quite safe and reliable as it currently stands. The new plants that are on order, there are 10 construction operating license requests in front of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission now, and those are a newer generation of plant which has more passive safety features. The four types of plants that are being requested are a AP1000, which is a Westinghouse design, an ABWR and ESBWR, which are boiling water reactors by General Electric and their Japanese partners, and what is called an EPR, which is a pressurized water reactor by French design. And all four of them have advanced safety features and a reduction in a lot of the active equipment, and will probably be more reliable and definitely safer.
We're talking about nuclear power and nuclear power plants, and the basis of the discussion or the genesis of it was last week's announcement or hint by Governor Doyle that the state's moratorium on building nuclear power plants might be lifted. And so we're talking about that issue, both pro and con. In this half hour, our guest is in favor of lifting that moratorium. After 7:30, we'll hear the other side of that issue. And you can join us at any time during this hour at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. And if you're in Madison, you can use our local number, which is 263-1890, 263-1890. Email is also welcome. The address is talk@wpr.org. Nuclear power and nuclear power plants are topic this hour. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming on later on today. High gas prices, the subprime mortgage crisis, just how bad is the economy today? After 5 on At Issue, Ben Marins and his guests discuss the state of the American economy. That's coming up later on today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, nuclear power is the topic under discussion. We're talking about pros and cons based on last week's statement by Governor Doyle that he'd be open to exploring removing the state's moratorium on building nuclear power plants, which has been in effect since sometime in the 80s. My guest in this half of the program is Michael Corradini, Chair of Engineering Physics and Wisconsin Distinguished Professor of Nuclear Engineering and Engineering Physics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he is in favor of lifting the moratorium. And we invite you to join us with your comments and questions at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our first caller this hour is Tom in Fond du Lac. Tom, good morning. Thanks
good morning.
For calling.
Good morning. My understanding is that these plants are very expensive to build, and I'm just wondering why each plant has to be designed individually and why you couldn't settle on one standardized design. It would seem to me that would be a lot cheaper.
I'm going to just answer directly. There's two points, I guess, to quickly get to the gentleman's question. First, right now, the new plants that are in order, there are 5 standard designs, 1 French design, 2 designs, 1 from Westinghouse and General Electric, and 1 from a Japanese manufacturer, 4. And so there are 4 standard designs. As to the cost, a new nuclear power plant is expensive. About 80% of the total cost of a new plant that you'd have to pay in your electricity bill is due to the capital cost. But the cost of operation and the cost of fuel is very small. That's in difference to like a natural gas plant, which is even more costly to buy electricity from, since none of them run. We have one here in Madison that runs only about 10% or 15% of the time because it's so costly. And there, about 90% of the cost is the natural gas, is 10% is the capital cost. So it all depends on the technology. But it's 4 standard plants are right now what are being offered within the United States.
Tom, thanks for that call. One of the questions put to the idea of having nuclear power plants is what they run on, which is uranium that has to be mined, and there are some environmental concerns about uranium mining. How do you respond to that?
I would say that digging up resources from the ground, whether it be uranium, copper, gold, coal, iron ore, requires that you're going to have to be very careful about the environmental impacts. I think historically, uranium mining, because it's been around for such a long time and most of it is done on surface mining, is actually relatively safe and relatively environmentally benign. But I use the word relative because all mining operations for all resources do disrupt the environment. Historically, I think that's the case, and I'm not concerned at all.
William in Madison is up next. William, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dr. Corradini.
Hello.
Well, you know, Dr. Corradini, it's possible to use tank circuit configurations between sky and ground to get electric power directly from nature itself. That is, I'm talking about a particular type of technology, what's differentiable from the use of atomics. That is, natural resonance occurs in nature. That's what causally allows the lightning. But it's possible, making use of specialized industrial circuits, to power tap the lightning of a whole new kind of industry used in America, other than coal and oil, other than environmental contaminating elements used by which really to generate electric power generated of another means, different than atomic energy.
You're probably correct. I'm not exactly sure what you're speaking about, but my only response to that would be that I think that would be a fairly costly mechanism for getting power on a steady basis. I do know when I was growing up in the Rocky Mountain Southwest, they actually were doing experiments in the upper mountains to essentially extract and try to see how much power could be extracted from lightning strikes. But it's relatively intermittent, and my guess is relatively expensive, or I would say actually very expensive. But I don't disagree with it. It's possible.
We'll go next to Keith in Bondiwell. Keith, good morning.
Yes, my question was, in France, 78% of their power is nuclear power. And my question is, they refuse all their nuclear spent rods. Why can't we do that?
That's a longer question to answer than I can in the time available, so I'll give you a quick answer. One is, the French and the Japanese government, for almost 30-plus years, has had a policy that they feel it's important to recycle as much of the uranium and by reprocessing the fuel and then extracting all the uranium and plutonium to reuse and burn for making electricity. And then you reduce the waste to about 1%, a couple of percent of the total mass. So I don't disagree with you. It's just been policy there, and it's been a policy since 1976 in the United States not to do that. So that's a policy issue. It is more expensive. But they feel, that is the French and the Japanese, that that's a better way to go. So I think it's something you need to talk to people other than I. I actually think reprocessing is a very useful technology.
You say it's been policy in the United States not to recycle the spent fuel rods?
Yep. Since the Carter administration, he officially made it formal U.S. policy in April of 1977. The Ford administration before that actually stopped reprocessing to relook at how to upgrade a plant in Pennsylvania that was doing reprocessing, but that administration ended and the new administration made it policy. Since then, we haven't had it. The Bush administration is reconsidering that. They actually are doing research on reprocessing, but they have not gone forward with any significant plans for commercial reprocessing in the U.S.
Okay. Next, we'll go to Ray in Milwaukee. Ray, good morning.
Good morning. I just want a straight answer from your guest. On 9/11, had any of those planes, which our government presumably could not stop, they even could not stop them from attacking our Pentagon, presumably the most important building in the United States, the Pentagon, they allowed that to be hit. Now, on 9/11, if those planes had gone into nuclear power plants, would we be sitting here having this discussion right now?
And probably.
Mining of uranium is extremely fuel-intensive because they also have to process the uranium, so you're lying through your teeth. Thank
well,
you.
I, with all due respect, you're wrong. And saying that I'm lying, I think, is an insinuation that I don't really appreciate. So your first question is, no, we would still be here talking because the planes would have not caused any sort of severe accident at these plants because of the containments that surround the plants. That's the answer to your first question. To your second question, saying that extracting uranium is energy intensive is not exactly correct. It takes energy to extract any resource from the ground, and it actually takes much more to extract all the fossil fuels or to extract the resources to build wind power. So I don't think that's a relevant comment.
Well, I think one of the things that has been true of the debate about nuclear power is that it's been a fairly emotional one, and for whatever reason, there seems to be a lot of fear about nuclear power, probably because of the connection with nuclear weapons. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but it sometimes makes the issue challenging to have a discussion about, because people's views are so set in concrete and so emotional.
I think that's absolutely true. I don't think there's anything can be done about that, and that's an unfortunate legacy that the first use of the technology was for making of weapons. But I look at it differently. Fossil fuels and chemical reactions are used to make most of the bombs. We've killed most of the people in the world historically. So it's psychologically, it's always there.
Let's say that the state of Wisconsin acted next week to lift the moratorium on building nuclear power plants in the state. How long would it be after that before a new plant would be built here in Wisconsin?
I think Governor Doyle actually answered that. In some sense, Wisconsin has already gone forward with building three coal plants. Two are in almost end phases of construction south of Milwaukee. One is being built in Weston, and that's about 1,500 megawatts of new baseload power. And because of that, I would say that Wisconsin, at least for the next 5 to 10 years, that's an estimate, is probably set for baseload electricity. So I would say, at the very least, you wouldn't see a new plant in Wisconsin for 10 years, maybe even a dozen years. So repealing the moratorium does not instantly cause us to change anything we do. It just initially levels the playing field for various types of baseload electricity.
Okay. What would you recommend people do to find out more about nuclear energy and its potential? Where would you recommend as a source that people could find good information about this?
Well, the former chairman of our department, who's retired, Max Carbon, has written a book. He has given away the book now. He's sold back 10 years ago about 20,000 copies. And so you can actually find the book on our website at the university, and you can download it. It's a very small book, very readable for the general public. That's one way.
Give us the website.
The website is www.engr.wisc.edu/EP for engineering physics. And you can, when you go there, you'll see a place to click, and you can download this book. It's called Nuclear Power, Villain or Victim. And even if you just Google nuclear power, villain, or victim, that should pop up pretty easily, and you can download it from where it gives you the connection. But I will say that there's a number of places. The League of Voters, Women's League of Voters, has a lot of good information. The Governor's Global Warming Task Force did an excellent job of looking on a very broad basis on various forms of energy, and there were two recent workshops and conferences at Monona Terrace.
Thank you. We're about out of time for this half hour, but Professor, thank you for joining us this morning. Professor Michael Corradini from UW-Madison. We'll get the other side of the issue after this news.
Energy. Sometimes I think I'm running out of energy. Seems like we use an awful lot for heating and lighting and driving, reading and writing and jiving. Energy, you'd think we'd be saving it up.
Energy, it's on our minds all the time with the high price of gasoline and other fuels that we use to heat our homes and turn on the lights. And so that's a big discussion. Last week, Governor Doyle hinted that the state's moratorium on building nuclear power plants might be lifted. That's part of the discussion. Good morning. It's 7:35, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report. This morning, we're looking at the issue of nuclear power, both pro and con. And in the last segment, the first half hour of the program, we heard the pro portion. And now we're going to switch sides, and we'll get an opposing view. My guest by phone is Al Geddix, professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and author of Resource Rebels, Native Challenges to Mining and Oil Corporations. Good morning, Professor, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
You oppose lifting the ban on nuclear power plant construction. Why?
Because the rationale is bogus. The primary reason that the proponents of nuclear power have advocated for lifting the ban is that we have to address the problem of global warming, and nuclear power is superior to fossil fuel-derived forms of energy, oil, coal, natural gas, because it doesn't emit greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere, and thus does not exacerbate the problem of global warming. This is a totally misleading and erroneous assumption. It ignores the fact, well, first of all, let's start with the admission that nuclear power plants themselves do not emit carbon dioxide. But that does not address the prior question of how do you get nuclear power. You cannot generate nuclear power unless you mine uranium. And you cannot mine uranium without emitting substantial amounts of fossil fuels or substantial emissions, that is carbon dioxide emissions, from fossil fuels as you are extracting uranium. It's not just the extraction of uranium, it's the processing of uranium in the milling process, the enrichment into yellowcake, the fabrication into fuel pellets that go into the nuclear power plants, the construction of nuclear power plants, which require fossil fuel emissions, the decommissioning of nuclear power plants, which also generate fossil fuel emissions, and finally the waste disposal, the final construction of the repository, which also generates fossil fuel emissions. If you take all these fossil fuel emissions at every stage of the nuclear fuel cycle, you have substantial contributions to global warming. In fact, one of the intermediate steps in the process of generating uranium for nuclear power is the enrichment process. That in itself is the most energy-intensive process of any industrial process in the world. It requires enormous amounts of coal-fired electrical power plants that generate substantial emissions, not only of carbon dioxide, but also of other global warming gases, such as chlorofluorocarbons, which are 10,000 to 20,000 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And so the argument that nuclear power is emission-free is a total fabrication.
Well, let's compare then the emissions that you're talking about with what comes out of the stacks from a coal-fired power plant during its lifetime. Are you saying that those are equivalent, or that the process leading up to the production of power from a nuclear plant would be more? How do you rank those?
Well, I'm not arguing that the emissions from coal-fired power plants are worse or better than nuclear-generated power. What I'm suggesting is that the issue is not whether we should go with coal or uranium. We should go with neither, that both of them are harmful to the environment, and we have economically and technologically viable alternatives in the form of renewables, in the form of wind energy, and in the form of solar-generated electricity, which by the time that any projected nuclear power plant would come online in 10 to 15 years would be economically competitive with that of nuclear power. But the issue is not whether we go with one polluting form of energy or another polluting form of energy. The question is that we should choose those technologically feasible and economically feasible forms of alternative energy which are already available and which have demonstrated that they are capable of fulfilling electrical needs without generating the byproducts, namely the greenhouse gases. And in the case of uranium mining, the other issue which is never addressed is the fact that if we were to pursue nuclear power plants, we'd be exacerbating the environmental racist situation that exists in this country, because we have used native people as the guinea pigs in this grand experiment for generating nuclear energy. At the time that we developed nuclear energy in the late 1940s, early 1950s, we knew from the experience of German and Czechoslovak uranium miners in Europe that exposure to radon gas, which is a byproduct of the breakdown of uranium in the underground mines, that those radon exposures were significant contributions to a lung cancer epidemic among those European miners. Before any Navajo miners went into those mines in the 1950s, the Atomic Energy Commission measured the levels of radon gas in those underground uranium areas in the Southwest, and they knew that those radon concentrations were sufficient, in fact, not sufficient, but were greater than the levels of radon that had already been demonstrated to cause lung cancer among those European miners. None of those Native American miners were warned that they were going into life-threatening situations in those underground uranium mines, and the result of that was that in the 1970s and 1980s, we had an epidemic of lung cancer among those Navajo and Pueblo, as well as white uranium miners in those uranium mining areas, because they were sacrificed to generate uranium that was primarily used for nuclear weapons during the Cold War. So that we have this legacy of a cover-up of the human health risks to uranium uranium-exposed populations, not just from uranium mining, but also from the tailings or the waste products that are left over after uranium is extracted from the rock. Those waste tailings, which amount to 200 million tons of radioactive materials, which are continuing to emit radiation into the environment, are a continuing and ongoing health concern to populations in those areas, not just for lung cancer, but also for other types of diseases, as well as birth defects among women who become pregnant in areas around these uranium tailings piles. The birth defects include, or in addition to birth defects, there are bone and reproductive and gastric cancers that are associated with uranium mining. None of those questions are addressed by the proponents of nuclear power, nor is the issue of waste disposal addressed, which would also disproportionately affect Native people. In this case, when we're talking about Yucca Mountain, the people that will be directly affected are the Western Shoshone people, who in 2006 went before the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racism and made a case that the United States was in violation of international treaties against racism for ignoring the land and treaty rights of the Western Shoshone, which are being violated by the construction of the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste disposal plant.
We're talking about the pros and cons of nuclear power this hour. Governor Doyle hinted last week that he would be open to talking about removing Wisconsin's ban on the construction of new nuclear power plants. And so we're looking at this issue from pro and con. We heard the pro side in the first half hour of the program, and we're hearing the con side in this half hour. And we have full phone banks. And on the other side of this weather break, we're going to go right to the phones and start taking some calls on this. A lot of people are interested in joining us. You can join us by email at talk@wpr.org. We'll be right back after we find out what the weather's going to be like around the state of Wisconsin. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:46, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour, we're going to be talking about cyber bullying. Bullying is moving from the playground to the internet, and the results can be just as bad. Cyberbullying, next hour. This hour, it's nuclear power. My guest in this half of the program is Al Geddix, professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and author of Resource Rebels, Native Challenges to Mining and Oil Corporations. We'll go back to the phones and we'll take a call first from Patrick in Madison.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So uranium, like oil, is a limited resource also. And I've heard that it will only last for about 40 years at our current levels of use. So I'm just wondering if that's a true statistic, because that seems like that's a reason in its own not to build new plants.
That statistic is true in the absence of this massive plan to build new nuclear power plants. That is, at current rates of usage of uranium, it's expected to be depleted, you know, within several decades, 40 years, 30 years, whatever. If the accelerated plan that is being proposed by Senator McCain is accepted, and other industrial countries like Britain also go along with that plan, which is now being considered in the British Parliament, recoverable amounts of uranium around the world would be exhausted in a very shorter period of time. And of course, as you exhaust the most accessible grades of uranium, you require larger amounts of energy to extract the remaining reserves. And not only do you use more fossil fuel energy and generate more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere when you do that, but you also generate, you also worsen the problem of global warming, which is presumably what nuclear power is supposed to counteract.
Thanks for that call. Let's go next to Tony in Juneau.
Hi there. I have a question about what I'd like to know is how much known uranium do we have to power all of the energy needs on Earth for all of the countries on Earth? Do you happen to know that statistic or where I can find it? That's another question I have is where can I get the best information on the web?
The best information is from the Oxford Study Group in England, which suggested that the uranium reserves, if the maximum number of power plants are built around the world, several hundred in the next 10 to 15 years, the uranium reserves that are known to exist would be exhausted within about 5 years.
Okay, can I make one more comment? Now, just the people need to know how much solar energy do we have to power the Earth, and how long could we power our needs? People need to know it would only take, I mean, we have all the sunlight that we need to power all of our energy needs on Earth. So that's why we need to turn to the renewable sources.
I agree. And the best estimates we have from the alternative energy community is that solar electricity costs are going to be equal to or less than the cost of nuclear electricity by the year 2015, which is the earliest possible date when a new nuclear power plant could come online in the United States. And, of course, wind energy is already more economical than nuclear energy, and we have a great deal of opportunity to expand wind capacity because we only generate 1% of our electricity needs from wind at the present moment. Within the last several months in Texas, there was a major investment in wind energy that's going to power the major electricity supply for urban areas in Texas. And Texas is only one of about a dozen states where there is untapped energy potential that could easily fill the electrical demand for the consumer needs in the entire United States population.
The wind energy isn't without without its issues. There's some not in my backyard kind of things going on even here in Wisconsin. It seems like no matter what you do, there's going to be some somebody who has an objection to it. But obviously we have to do something. Let's go next to George in Facebook.
Hi.
Go ahead, George.
Hello. I'd like to agree with everything Al said so far, but one thing that hasn't been mentioned on the show thus far is we have a third nuclear power plant in Genoa, Wisconsin, called Lac Bar, La Crosse Boiling Water Reactor. It's been closed since 1987. It still hasn't been completely disposed of. They took the vessel down to Barnwell, South Carolina last year. It's cost the ratepayers about $4 million a year just to have the plant sitting there idle for 21 years, and now it's probably going to cost upwards of $100 million to dispose of it. And this plant is only 1/20th or even less of what modern nuclear power plants are. It was a 50-megawatt plant, never operated sufficiently, had a fairly bad fuel cycle four back in 1976, which caused leakage into the containment water. Well, what I'd like to say, though, is that both candidates for president seem to be pro-nuclear right now. Both of them, one there in Nevada, have said that they're not going to supply or make Yucca the primary disposal. And I think Al might know this, but does he also believe and know that Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, would be the primary second site if Yucca is not used? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. One of the other unaddressed issues by proponents of nuclear power is that if nuclear energy is revived, there's going to be more nuclear waste. It's already demonstrated that we cannot handle the nuclear waste we've already generated for the past 50, 60 years. Yucca Mountain is not a suitable site. None of the geological or hydrological studies that have been conducted at Yucca Mountain demonstrate that this is a safe site for storing nuclear waste. And so the question is, where is the waste going to be disposed of? During the 1980s, the Department of Energy characterized the Wolf River batholith, which is a granite rock formation in northeast Wisconsin, that goes up and down the Wolf River area as a suitable site for nuclear waste disposal. And one of the lessons that we learned from the 1980s is that once people understand what the social, economic, health, and environmental impacts of a waste disposal site are, there is going to be massive citizen opposition and tribal opposition, because not only are citizens affected in Wisconsin, but in the Wolf River area, you have the Menominee Indian Nation, you have the Mohican Nation, you have the Oneida Nation, all those Indian tribes which are going to be directly impacted if that repository goes ahead. And so what I want to know, and what has never been addressed by people in Wisconsin that want revival of nuclear power plants, is are you going to accept that Wisconsin is going to be a second repository, because there is no room, even if in the unlikely event that Yucca Mountain goes ahead, they're still going to need additional storage space for new nuclear waste. And are you going to sacrifice the headwaters of one of the most pristine rivers in Wisconsin, the Wolf River, for the disposal of highly radioactive waste, which is going to contaminate the watershed and is also going to pose a major threat to the health of people within the eight counties that surround the Wolf River Batholith?
Here's an email from Carl in La Crosse. If nuclear power is so safe, why does Congress have to keep passing the Price-Anderson Act, which forces the insurance industry to insure the nuclear industry at bargain basement rates? The insurance industry will not insure nukes, no way, no how, so the government forces them to very cheaply.
This is absolutely true. The private market, the capital markets, will not invest in nuclear power, even with these Price-Anderson Act guarantees, because it is such a risky investment. And the last piece of legislation that was passed by the Congress in 2005 put all these loan guarantees and subsidies for nuclear energy, and the investors in Wall Street are still reluctant to invest in a single nuclear power plant because they realize that the risks of this technology are so great that they will never never see a return on their investment.
No matter what you do, there's going to be there could be problems with financing it. We've seen some issues with getting alternative sources of energy online. Wall Street investors are not exactly lining up to support it. There's a long we have to wait for the payoff. We've seen some protests around wind power. No matter where we look, we've got a lot of problems here. What is it going to take to get all of this stuff together so that we can solve our energy problems without killing ourselves?
Well, I think that the evidence is all around us that we don't have a long period of time to wait to address the problem of global warming. I mean, the weather patterns that have resulted in massive flooding in Wisconsin in the last 6 months. Those kinds of environmental and weather-related disasters are going to be on the increase given the instabilities that are being generated by the emission of greenhouse gases. We can't wait 15, 20 years until the first nuclear power plant comes online to see whether this is going to address the problem of global warming. We already have the means at our disposal in the form of renewable energy, and the issue of objections to wind power is simply a question of siting. If these plants, if these turbines are sited in the appropriate places, that will address many of the objections in communities that have concerns about this. But this is nothing compared to the kinds of health and environmental disasters that would occur if we lifted the ban on nuclear power and allowed uranium mining to be revived in areas which are still suffering from the effects of radiation contamination from the 1950s and 1960s.
Professor
Geddes, the worst aspect of environmental racism, that we not only do not address the problems from the past, but we impose additional burdens on those who have been already victimized
by 60 years
of governmental irresponsibility.
We'll have to leave it there, Professor Geddes. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Stay tuned. After the news, we'll take on cyberbullies. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network.